So today, Emily spoke to Catherine Gretzinger, a CBC radio legend and a tenured UBC professor at the School of Journalism. But above all, Catherine Gretzinger is a beautiful person. I'm going to play this interview Emily did today, and this is part of CITR's full day of FemCom programming for International Women's Day. So I'm more than proud to present you with this interview. Without further ado, let's have a listen.
Decided to go to Russia. Today is International Women's Day, and at CITR, we are broadcasting a full day of FemCom programming. How do you feel about that?
Thrilled. Absolutely thrilled. How rare is that? How sad it is that it has to happen on International Women's Day. Maybe one day it'll just be happening. Because there have been many days when I've listened to the radio and it's been wall-to-wall men. Not that there's anything wrong with listening to men, but it's kind of nice to have other kinds of representation. So it's good.
So why do you think it's necessary?
You know, women make up more than 50% of the population and for far too long have kind of quietly done all the work outside of the spotlight, away from the microphone. And women have a lot to say and a lot to contribute. And so having dedicated programming time to listen to the thoughts, feelings, ideas, impressions, and evidence that women dig out is pretty lovely.
Could you tell us a little bit about your career and how it started?
Oh, my goodness. So I was kind of an accidental, journalist. So I finished high school. Had a horse, played soccer. I kind of had all these things that I was doing. Didn't know exactly what I wanted to do in school. So I dabbled. I took some philosophy courses and sociology and psychology and English and was doing this, that, and the other thing and working a lot. I worked in a law office. I worked for a travel company. Ended up doing really well in the travel business and kind of getting all these opportunities thrown at me time and time again and realized it was great. It was fine. It was easy. I was spending a lot of time in Australia and Hawaii, but there was no meaning to it. And I knew that I wanted to do something to make a contribution, and I felt like I wanted to tell stories. So I started really paying attention. I'd always been a bit of a news hound. So I started paying attention to what was going on in Canada. I was living in Australia at the time. My brother-in-law was a journalist of some note. He'd been working at CBC at the time and decided, you know, I was going to go for it. So I applied to a couple of schools, got accepted at both schools, decided to go to Ryerson in Toronto and do a practical degree, Bachelor of Applied Arts, and walked in and knew I was home. It was incredible. And I did one year, varied courses, print and radio and television, this, that, and the other. And my teacher, Stuart McLean, took me aside and said, what are you going to do for the summer? And I said, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I still had aspirations to go and be a magazine writer. He said, you should go to CBC Radio. And I said, really? CBC Radio? He said, yep, you love people. Radio should be your thing. You should go home, because I was from Vancouver. The school was in Toronto. You should go home and work at CBC. So he made a call. The guy, Kurt Albertson, on the other end of the phone said, yeah, she can come here for 4 days. We'll let her work for 4 days. So it ended up being 4 days, the last 4 days of a particular program that was on the air. And 4 days turned into 4 months, which has turned into 30 years of working for the public broadcaster in some way or another.
As a young journalist, did you notice any difference in the treatment of your male colleagues?
No. Isn't that amazing? I didn't. And I think, I honestly think that I had 20 years in a bubble, Emily, because I never, ever understood my agency, my voice, to be any less than completely equal. My bosses tended to be women. My colleagues tended to be men and women. I had every opportunity that anyone else had. My pay, because of the way that the unions work at the CBC, was exactly equal to my male colleagues. That was a little bit different once they decided that I had to be a host, and I was resisting this thing about hosting because I was loving reporting so much. But when they finally said, you know, we really want you to do this, they offered me quite a lot less than I believe that they had been paying the man who had done the job before me. But I had a very, very feisty friend, mentor, who was hosting a national radio show at the time. And she took me aside and she said, you are not even going to look at that offer. You are going to go in there and you are going to say you need a third more than they're offering you. And she said, I don't care what you're feeling at the time, because you're going to be nervous and everything else. She said, it doesn't matter. You need to go in there and do that. Not for you, for the women coming behind you. And you know what? That was the best advice. Because that kind of belief that what I did could have an impact on someone else allowed me to be really strong and fight. I don't think I would have for myself. But the idea that somebody else might benefit was really powerful. And they were shocked. They were totally shocked. I remember getting a call from a very tough woman in human resources saying, excuse me, what kind of a response is this? And I said, it's a response that takes into account the fact that you're trying to pay me a lot less than the person who was doing the exact same job before, that you guys want me. I don't care if I do the job because I love my reporting job. And that there will be women behind me who won't have to push so hard. And you know what? I not only did I get the extra money, I got extra on top of that. And the very first year that I did the job, I got a bonus. And it was very gratifying to do that. And I've continued to do that. They always lowball. At this university, women get paid less than men. It's systemic. So kind of continuing to question has been a really important thing. But at CBC, that was my only experience of being treated less than as a woman. And it really wasn't less than. It was just, what can we get away with? This person is way younger than this other guy. Let's see if she'll take what she can get. And I think they were shocked that I just said, nope, not going to do that.
Coming from that story, what characteristics do you think women need more so than men to succeed?
Boy. That's funny that I said the word boy in response to that question. That's interesting. I think women have to be true to themselves. I really do. I think there's all these binaries that women find themselves in. Women are the caregivers. Women are the peacemakers. Women are the communicators, right? There's these kind of tropes. There's these responses that we fall into. And some of that is driven by gender. Some of it's driven by circumstance. I think when we allow ourselves to play roles, as opposed to being true to the people that we are, we maybe get ourselves in a bit of trouble. So what I think is women have to believe that they can do what they want to do. They have to find other women who they can trust to push them and comfort them and everything in between. They have to be good at their jobs. They shouldn't expect to get jobs just because they're women. And I don't think, I have never met a woman student who has. I think they need to care a lot about the contributions they're going to make, especially when it comes to journalism at this time. There's a lot of arrows being thrown. And I don't know that that anyone who's sort of faint of heart will be able to carry on. So having a confidence in an internal confidence and an external belief that you have a contribution to make, those would be the two things I would suggest. Everything else is kind of gravy.
Obviously, the fight for equality is a fight for everyone, right? It's not just up to women to contribute and own their space. It's up to men to give it to them as well. So how do you think men can contribute? How can they react? What could they do differently or better?
Well, they can start by taking up less airtime. They can start by giving credit where credit is due. I have a great example of this, actually. I did a course the other week where there was great feedback. And my woman boss told her woman boss, who told her two women bosses, that they had received this great feedback. So not only did I get a thanks from the people who were working beside me and the people who were participants in it, it went all the way up the chain. It's a simple thing, but it's incredibly powerful to be received, to have your work received with gratitude. So I think I would love it if men were outwardly grateful for the contributions their women colleagues make. I think they have to share space, fundamentally. I think they need to let go of a bit of power. So it's not only about making sure that women are represented at the table, but that the ideas that women bring are valued equally to the ideas that have sort of built these institutions in the past. So they're going to have to embrace some change, meaningful change, not just for women, but for anyone who sort of falls on the spectrum that isn't a traditional white male power person. So anyone who sort of falls out of that needs to be respected and included in a meaningful way. And the only way for that to happen is for people to intentionally acknowledge it, that it has to happen, and then make space for it. So lots has to change, I think I'm saying, huh?
As you just mentioned, we're having this conversation from a privileged point of view. People of color, indigenous, transgender, and queer folks face many more challenges. As part of the Reporting on Indigenous Communities program, you've had some role in this. What steps can be taken to make sure that everyone is treated with respect?
Oh, it's such a great question. It takes a lot of work. I think we pay lip service to the word respect. And in order to make change, you actually have to walk the talk. And it's not easy. There's been so many lessons about how to include in a meaningful way. So in Indigenous communities, we've learned a lot about the power of the circle. So circles don't have hard edges. Bringing people together, kind of giving priority to everyone's voice at the table. Diversity not just as a box to check off, but as a way to meaningfully include various opinions and experiences at the table. We've done that a lot in reporting in Indigenous communities, but also in the classroom. You know, making sure that diversity is a priority, not just because it looks good for a global institution to have global citizens within it, but because it actually improves everyone's learning. You know, if you and I are the same, then we actually can very quickly sort of become an echo chamber for each other. If we want to break out of an echo chamber, which in journalism is completely critical, then we better shake it up a little bit and bring more voices to the table. But then that also means about decision-making and changing the way that decisions get made. So we tend to have this hierarchical top-down model. So I think what I've learned working in a graduate school is that we can make suggestions. We can say, here's the bar. Here's what we're going for. Here's the sort of standard we're trying to reach for. But if we don't give our students, all of our students, some agency to get there themselves, then shame on us. Shame on us. So I'm quite happy to say, you know what, this is not good enough. This is, we actually have to reach a little bit further, or it's okay to give that kind of work. But if you want to get a job, you might need to, and make some suggestions, but I'm never going to supposed to tell somebody what to do. I'll strongly suggest, but I do try to resist that. And I think I've learned that from the storytelling that I've been blessed with over the years, especially working in Indigenous communities. The number of times that I have had the opportunity to sit with an elder who tells me a story that I look back on a year, 2 years, 5 years, 11 years later and think, oh my gosh, that's what she was trying to say, or that's what he was trying to say, or that's what they meant. So the power of story kind of continues to teach And that is something that hierarchies don't really understand. So that's another kind of possibility for us, I think.
You talked about echo chambers. There are also these social bubbles on social media. What are the dangers of that?
Oh, they're endless. The meanness. I was talking about this with a friend the other day. So he has a fairly high profile radio program. And talking about what it's like for him to be subject to all of this vitriol and mistruth and these sort of strange slices that get pulled out of conversations, out of context, and then shared, and then people have these wild impressions about what's going on. They're sort of ignoring evidence, and they're I think the only way to deal with it is to understand the technology, and participate in it in a way that is meaningful to you. So I'm very wary of social media. I participate in it, of course, because that's a really great way for me to communicate with my students. But I try not to tweet opinions at people in the same way that I would never do that on the radio. I always try to maintain a neutral voice. And I try not to react when people say things that are untrue or unkind. And I try not to ever participate in a pile-on, ever. And I try to counter falsehoods with truths. So it's a lot of work, and I sometimes feel like being on Twitter is like, why am I participating in this? But I feel a bit of an obligation. People seem to want to have these kinds of conversations in that forum, and I don't want to not participate in conversations that are important. So I just have to be careful. I think what people, especially young people or people new to journalism, just need to be mindful of how powerful the tool is. Seems innocuous, 140 characters. How much damage can you do? A lot. You can do a lot of damage. And a lot of damage can be done to you. So just being careful.
So you're talking about the mean tweets, and obviously the president a bit south of the border has been a bit rough towards women as well in his comments and in his behavior. How do you personally find the strength to just shake it all off?
Oh, I sometimes don't. I sometimes just sit and think, oh my gosh. I find the strength in trying to teach my kids. The day my son was born, my friend called and said, okay, you have 18 years. Do not fuck this up. Do not. And I think about that all the time. So I use what's happening across the line to say to my kids, you know, this is not the kind of world that you have been raised to expect. And so you need to question this at every turn. I think in journalism, we have an obligation to the truth, number one, and to our audiences, to inform people fully about what's going on. I think it's easy to laugh at or dismiss what's happening, what's coming out of the White House and the people who surround the President of the United States. I think countering what's happening with truth is important. I also think being mindful not to over-amplify. I think we need to just understand that this is going to be kind of this hurricane of stuff coming at us for 4 years at least. And so to be strategic about when it's reacted to is going to be important. Not that I'm saying to disregard what's coming out. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying to be mindful that ramping up the volume on some of this stuff is probably not our best plan. So I don't know, trying to stay calm, trying to understand that people who are kind of saying, what is going on, are not crazy, that this is a completely rational response to something that is unbelievable. And then to just fully take delight in listening to people like David Letterman or John Oliver or the people who have been able to come up with these counterpoints in a way that is smart and sophisticated, playful and yet powerfully poignant, you know, that allows a lot of light. And probably we all need a bit of that.
If you could say one thing to young girls, to every young girl on this world growing up, what would you tell her? Just one piece of advice. Mm.
I have a very dear little friend whose name is Mayla, and she's 6. So whenever she's over and we're talking about life, she has all these big questions all the time. And I just try to always remind her that she is every bit as smart and creative and beautiful and strong and important as any other human being on the planet. Her gender doesn't matter at all. Herself, her uniqueness is what really matters. I would just love to say to every little girl, you can believe in whatever you want to believe. You can live whatever life you want to live. And you are absolutely fine in doing that. I wish the world was set up to accommodate for all the difference that we present. The world is not quite so embracing of difference sometimes. I wish it was. But I think if we teach every little girl that she has just as much power. I was just reading something the other day about the fact that by the time little girls are the same age as Mayla is now, they're already starting to step back. They're all ready to speak less and clean up more and make things better more. And so while the instinct to help is a beautiful and powerful thing, just making sure that girls don't feel any more responsible than anyone else to do all that work is meaningful work and it should be shared. So I would have a long time. I'd want to talk to these little girls for a very long time. But I, you know what? I probably approach it in the same way that I would approach my young men, young women, gender non-binary students. I would say, you are every bit as important as everybody else, and don't you ever let anyone tell you otherwise or allow you to believe otherwise, because you shouldn't.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us today.
Thank you very much for going into journalism at a time when it's challenging to be a journalist. And thank you for trying so hard to always bring integrity to your work. And it's a thrill to be able to help you with this. Thank you.
We are back at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the UBC Point Grey campus on the traditional unceded Coast Salish lands of the Musqueam people. Thank you so much, Emily, for that amazing interview with Catherine Gretzinger.